Everybody, welcome to the K Thompson Live Show. This is a Wednesday evening on February the 21st. As you can hear, our little theme music every once in a while when we can get it working. All right, let's jump right in. We got a lot of stuff to talk about this evening. If you any of our Facebook, first off, let me say that I am the son. This is K Thompson Live Show on Wednesday, the 8 o'clock hour, and you are
your mother, K Thompson, K Thompson Live, and we're going to be talking to Glenda Taylor, Dr. Glenda Taylor, and we just received some news from C.C. Quarles. A young, fantastic writer, but she will not be able to be on the show. Oh, boy, her brother was in a very bad accident. They were on the way to the hospital. At the last minute, she apologized profusely. I assured her to take care. We're all going to be sending prayers for her. This has been really a blow. But Cece, don't worry, we will have you on just as soon as you're able. And one thing, I really hope your brother comes through this. That was a real blow. But anyway, Dr. Glenda Taylor is going to be calling in very shortly. So we're going to be talking to our other two hosts here on the show. Wayne Gilman will be on, of course, and Byron Saunders. So this is really a blow. I'm just so sorry for Cece. But we will be talking to her again, and we all wish her well, and we send her and her family our prayers, hoping her brother will be fine.
That's definitely, she had a family emergency, so of course our prayers go out to our good friend Cece Quarles. As some of you might have seen on our Facebook page, we're going to talk about Michael Jackson. And if you have the book there, Ma, it's a book written by Glenda Taylor. It's called Wanna Be Starting Something, Michael Jackson, A Social Activist. And that is something that Dr. Taylor has written this book with this idea of her concept of Michael Jackson being a social activist. And to my surprise, Cece had, she was, from what you were telling me, Mom, she was has that theory as well, mm-hmm. and she kind of agreed with that line of thinking. And so we're going to jump in a little bit with Dr. Taylor. Let me say hello to one of our other co-hosts. Byron Saunders is on the line as well, and then we're going to jump right into the discussion with Dr. Taylor. We're going to be discussing, of course, some of the other news, but we want to. We've been talking about this for a minute. We want to talk about this subject. Let me just welcome our other co-host, resident historian Byron Saunders. How you doing, Byron?
good evening, Kay and Eric. Blessed day in paradise. A lot of movement going on in our world. Looking forward to tonight's show. It's still full with so much to discuss, but you know, it's all connected. That's the one wonderful mm-hmm. thing about this show, that we get a chance to connect the dots for everyone who's listening, and an opportunity to try to really comprehend and understand how it's all coming together for us as a people. So here we are.
Okay. All right, here we go. And let me welcome Glenda Taylor, Dr. Glenda Taylor. Hey, Glenda, how are you doing this evening?
Hi, how are you? Hi.
How are
you? Can you hear me?
Can you hear? Yes, I can hear you. We can hear you. You can hear us, correct? All right?
Yes, I
do. Hi, Glenda. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. And you?
We just talked. I'm fine. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, Cece is not going to be. Ah, boy. Anyway, we will have her on, and we wish her well. And she was so looking forward to being on with you, Glenda, I'm telling you. And what her dissertation, this was going to be really, really something. But we're all looking forward to it. And by the way, want to be starting something? Michael Jackson, a social activist. Now, you say that you are a Michael Jackson scholar. So you say, I am a Michael Jackson scholar. I said it, I proclaim it, and I will not be ashamed to declare from the mountaintop. I am a scholar who's interested in is studying the artistry of a man who has been one of the most influential artists who ever existed. Okay, well, speak, Glenda, Dr. Oh, Dr. Glenda, Taylor.
Well, I want to be starting something. I call that the appetizer, the prelude to the dissertation, because it introduces the idea, and it will be released in 2 months. So you have the copy of it before it's been actually released. But the reason why I felt the need to, you know, make the statement that you read is because when you talk about Michael Jackson, everybody wants to talk about everything but his artistry. So, you know, it's all about his personal life. And when I wrote it, I just wanted to be clear from the beginning that it was a book about his artistry and what he was trying to do with his art, not about his personal life or any, you know, other issues. You know, it's just discussed quite often.
Right. And that, Glenda, that what my mother just read is listed in the section that you have under proclamation. So obviously that was your proclamation about how you feel about Michael. So why do you think, I'm going to ask you, why do you think that he was a social activist?
Well, it depends on how you define social activism. But traditionally, and this is what I discuss in my dissertation, African-American artists have used their stage, their art form, their platform to promote social justice. From Paul Robeson to Nina Simone to Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee, you could just name them. And what?
Yeah.
And Michael, who was a bibliophile, and who really not only was he around those people and socialized with them, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, all of them, who were using their art to make political and social statements. Most people, you know, were dancing to Michael in the 80s, and they started paying attention to his personal life, and they knew what he was saying, but too many people are not realizing how much and how seriously he studied cultural traditions. He knew the artist, and he consciously imitated what they were doing and wanted to do. As a matter of fact, his brother said when he wrote his memoir that from the time Michael was a little guy and met Bob Marley in the 70s and saw how he was using his art, that Michael said, I want to do that. And at the same time, you know that he was at Motown at the same time as Stevie Wonder. And Stevie Wonder said he sat in the studio and used to watch him and study him. And that was a pattern. Michael studied people. He consistently read about the artists, but he studied them. He studied Stevie Wonder. He studied, played basketball and sports with Marvin Gaye. And he was trying to do what they did. And he did.
Let me just take a quick second and welcome our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, to the show. Let me open your mic here. Wayne, how you doing, Wayne?
All right. Good evening. Forgive my tardiness, but I flew just from Pennsylvania in a driving rainstorm to get here, so I wanted to make sure that I settled in and not miss much of the great Glenda Taylor,
Okay.
And I'm sorry that I'm sorry I missed the opening part, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah, and jumping back into it, Glenda, I'm going to ask you some things. I agree that Michael absorbed all of those things. I think he's part of the lineage of African-American music and artistry. Myself being a year younger than Mike, grew up obviously with him, right? And those artists that you mentioned, Stevie and even Jackie Wilson, who he was greatly influenced by, as well as James Brown, he's part of the lineage of African-American culture and music. However, some of the artists that you mentioned, like the Ozzie Davises and some other people, their activism, their social activism, at least in my opinion, was a little bit more overt. And I'm just interested to see how your thinking and in terms of what was, I kind of have a feeling about Michael's, obviously, you know, being in the business, he's not going to be immune, and growing up in the time we grew up, he's not going to be immune to noticing the treatment of his people. He's not going to be immune to experiencing that and feeling that, certainly the type of person he was. To be a great artist, you have to be a very sensitive person, and certainly Michael seemed like that type of individual. But I'm curious, and lastly, with his issue with Tommy Mottola and the whole thing when he was with Reverend Al, when he seemed to make some overt social activist statements, but how do you jive that with some of his earlier accomplishments in music? And I'm kind of teeing the ball up for you. I have something in my mind when he broke in, but let Glenda respond to that first before we jump
okay.
in, guys.
So what specifically are you referring to when you said earlier, when you were?
When I said earlier in his music, you mean?
Yeah, in other words.
Go ahead.
I'm listening. I'm trying to get your exact question.
I don't understand what do you mean when you call him a social activist? Because he seemed like a lot of artists. And I know as an actor, and I think Byron would attest to this as well, some African-American and blacks that were in the business kind of
uh-huh.
wanted to focus on their artistry and not
uh-huh.
make too many waves or make too many statements, although you couldn't hide from it, and some didn't. Some were a little bit like Harry Belafonte, Ozzy and Ruby Davis, you know, individuals
right.
like
well,
that who are on Marcus
right.
out front. So
right.
what do you mean?
I understand what you're saying. Well, first of all, when you look at Michael, you have to look at the different, literally, the different Michaels, the different faces. It was Michael, the little boy, who was
mm-hmm.
under Motown. And at that point, he was not allowed. He was, you know, they did everything so the Jacksons would never appear to be, you know, power to the people. You know, it was,
mm-hmm.
they were supposed
mm-hmm.
to have a certain image, and they were definitely not allowed. Berry Gordy said it, his mother said it, and they were not permitted to speak out of what they felt politically, if they had any political opinions. And then what you saw was Michael evolving. It started with the Jacksons, because when they first came out and when they first left Motown, you'll see that they did songs and you know, like Men of War, and they started kind of, you know, growing up and coming into their opinion about politics. But when you see Michael, the issue of Michael is consciousness. And what most people don't understand is his religious roots. So he wasn't going to be a social activist like, you know, Stokely Carmichael type of activist. He would
mm-hmm.
be more in the category of, say, Sammy Davis Jr., where he did a lot, but yet he had opinions that were not necessarily as strong as maybe, say, you know, say someone like Nina Simone. Nina Simone used her art to make certain statements, and Michael did the same thing. But Michael's statement was the Martin Luther King statement, you know, we are the world, we love everybody, let's everybody hold each other's hand and live together. But he also did songs like They Don't Care About Us. And when you look at his individual songs in his portfolio as he matured with his albums, Dangerous, History, and those, you start seeing a different person whose voice was stronger. So by the time
mm-hmm.
you get to the Tommy Mottola stage, and see, another thing, too, about Michael, he was basically in the closet, rooted because of his religion and because of his Motown upbringing, about how he felt about a lot of things. Because some of his best friends, even though, you know, we saw certain images in the media, you know, he loved Elizabeth Taylor, he loved Liza Minnelli, he loved Quincy Jones. The people who Michael was very, very close to were Dick Gregory. He had a really strong relationship that nobody knew about with Louis Farrakhan. He was close to
mm-hmm.
Stevie Wonder when Stevie Wonder was in the process of fighting for the Martin Luther King holiday. They spent a lot of time together during that period. He was very close
mm-hmm.
to Al Sharpton. But we didn't really
mm-hmm.
know that he was close to Al Sharpton. But first of all, when you look at his memorial service, and you see that of all the ministers that they could have chosen to give the memorial service, they chose Al Sharpton. And he was also very close to Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was giving money, Mandela too. Mandela wrote a letter at the time of Michael's death and called Michael his grandson. He was like a grandson to him.
Wow.
So
wow.
These are people, it's like, wow. And you just keep on looking at these people and the amount of time and the energy and the financial support. Like, most people don't know that he, that Farrakhan asked Michael to come to the Million Man March, and according to Farrakhan, he agreed to come. And then I
mm-hmm.
guess he went home and thought about it, and people talked to him, and he didn't come, but he gave him a check for over $1 million. So he was supporting Mandela. He was supporting the Million Man March. He was doing a lot of things, not just with his music, saying, you know, we are the world and we got to come together and heal the world, but he was financially supporting causes since he really basically in the 80s when he had the money. So when some people thought he just came out when he was attacked and the police, you know, were harsh with him when he got arrested in the 90s, but Michael had started long before that supporting, you know, the anti-apartheid movement, all of that. But that's
right,
not
right.
what you hear so much. But and it was really amazing to me because I'm like looking and I say, wow, he did this, and he did some art auction mm-hmm. at his home for the, you know, for the anti-apart movement, and this was like back in the 80s. So
mm-hmm.
there was a lot going on that, yep. you know, if you put it in a microscope and start pulling it, I was surprised that, according to Farrakhan, you know, he wasn't a Muslim, but they used to talk,
mm-hmm.
and Michael used to send him a fruit basket every year, and same thing with Coretta Scott King. It's Coretta
wow.
Scott King's daughter said that Michael called her when she was on her deathbed and made her smile. So he was constantly in communication. Dick Gregory was the person that Michael was the only person, basically, other than his family and lawyers, that he was communicating with when he was on trial in 2005. Now, we all know
right.
Dick Gregory, you know? So.
Right.
So
yeah, also,
so
and also, I just want to say that it probably would have been a longer time before black people were able to get on MTV if it had not been for Michael. Because we all know that Michael was the first one whose videos played in heavy rotation. He brought up the idea. He fought him and Rick James, but really Michael was the one who broke through. And kind of that kind of opened the door for a lot of other African-American artists to start getting their videos played on MTV. Wayne, you wanted to say?
No, I just happen to concur 1,000% with Glenda because I lived through and covered some of the things that she talked about. And Michael's social activism was very subtle. I mean, it was not, as you would say, overt, like a Dick Gregory, Ozzie Davis, or even Sammy Davis Jr., even though they had that commonality of talent. I mean, Sammy Davis preceded him in terms of, you know, somebody being one of the greatest showmen on the face of the earth coming out of the black Latino community. But with Michael, you know, Michael, you have to look at he was shrouded by that early tutelage by his father, who was oppressive. Then, you know, he was trying to grow up and find his place. Finally, when he broke out of the mold and just went out on his own, you know, he was discovering himself. But each subtle accomplishment, like the MTV thing, and I was at that news conference that he had at the previous headquarters of the National Action Network when he, condemned Tommy Mottola for the actions he was taking. I mean, little things that he did, even his purchasing of the Beatles catalog, you know, somebody from our community having that kind of might, that was a big thing back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I couldn't figure out, where I got confused was the Michael Jackson who disfigured himself, but I guess that was his way of trying to react to the various experiences that you know I felt. I mean, your mother and I could attest to the times when he would come up to the station, he and his brothers, and go out to get coffee for us. Mm-hmm. All right, which I found astounding. You know, when I think back now, Michael Jackson would buy a round of coffee for all the jocks at BLS and LIB, and I'm not talking about ordering out. He had gone downstairs with his brothers to bring stuff upstairs at 801 Second Avenue. I mean, the deal is, it's just to see him evolve from that, you know, to his untimely death. Say what you will about it, whether it was his doctor or whether it was his will. You know, Michael Jackson left his mark on the community. And I know we could go on to the point of ad nauseum about it, but... You know, Michael was a social activist in his own way.
Dr. Taylor, this is Byron Saunders.
Byron,
I have a question for you.
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead, Byron.
The evolution of Michael Jackson's social activism, I find and discovered, and wanted to know if you, in your research, once he went on his own, his songs and his lyrics began to take on social activism way in advance of many of the other artists. And he featured and focused his songs with respect to the African diaspora, cultural initiatives that were part of like what Stevie was doing, and really ahead of the crowd for most, because all of his lyrics in every one of his songs seem to be addressing some of the social ills that we were engaging in our community. Is that something that you discovered once he went on his own?
You're so right. Even Bad, when you look at the – because sometimes the lyrics were not always the same as what the image is in the video. And when you look at the image with Bad and remember when he did the dance scene with Wesley Snipes and those scenes?
Yeah.
And it was the subway – he was dealing with urban issues, and he was reading, and that's what he did. He would buy bookstores. That's how much he was addicted to books. So he was reading, and he knew, but he also grew up in a religion which said, you know, we are the world, and everybody is everybody. So he wanted to put that idea of Martin Luther King's, you know, the beloved community, and he shows it. When you look at the video, his videos of the Heal the World and everybody's joining hands. And then he did remember Get on the Bus, Spike Lee's movie about the song for that.
Yeah.
And when you look at the visual images and then pay attention to the lyrics, it's like, wow, I was surprised because I was suspecting it after he died and they were constantly playing his music and you're seeing this on television. And then when you start really paying attention to the lyrics, and then you just thought what he was doing in the background, because like you said, with Sammy Davis Jr. was out actually more open about being a part of the civil rights movement. But he and Michael, also Michael was very, very close to Muhammad Ali. I mean, close to these people. Muhammad Ali is the one that, according to his brother Jermaine, gave him the autobiography of Malcolm X, and he was reading, about the Muslim religion, and Muhammad Ali was telling him, you got to know, you're the greatest, you're the greatest. And Jermaine said he loved him to study, the way Muhammad Ali danced. And he used to spend hours as a young boy with not just Fred Astaire and, Gene Kelly. He spent hours studying the tapes and the film reels in Sammy Davis Jr.'s library. And there's a very touching video that you could get on YouTube. You could go into, there was a tribute not long before Sammy Davis Jr. died, when Michael was there and a lot of the entertainers were there.
Oh,
and remember that? And
right, 60th birthday, I think, or something like that.
Exactly. And Sammy literally gets, you can see he's getting choked up and teary-eyed, because Michael, the song was, I just remember the lyrics, he said, I am here because you were there, and I didn't have to go through everything that you went through. And those lyrics are powerful, because it was a statement to all of the Sammy Davis Juniors and, Josephine Baker and Jackie Wilson, and we know who James Brown was. So I think with people, everybody has multiple sides. And this is the side of Michael that if you put it together, you say, wow, Michael was really, you know, but he believed in the Martin Luther King beloved community. And you see that all throughout his work. It's just there.
Yeah, and also, you know.
And you know what surprised me? The one thing, and I still, I'm not totally sure what it means. Michael was even doing things like using sign language in his videos. If you look at black and white at the end of that, he's using
black
sign
and white.
Language. Yeah, exactly. And that's
and
a
powerful
one on the controversy. That's worth a
also,
lot of
you know. Yeah. Glenda, you say that that the visual argument and one led to the filmmaker's own conclusions. You say that he understood the power of the visual image and he presented his arguments in his own conclusion. Music videos became increasingly popular in the 80s. Jackson saw what were called music videos as a medium, an art form in which he could draw images of world affairs and raise public consciousness. So therefore, he was a social activist.
Yeah.
He even talks. If you look at the lyrics, he even talks about other countries, and he's talking about the other countries and the war and the guns and how children. How do you explain to children how their parents are being gunned down? He does it. It's there. It's all there in black and white.
Yeah, and I just wanted you to hear you vocalize it a little bit because it's not when the average person is going to saying that Michael Jackson was a social activist, it causes the average person to think about him for a minute and really examine. I mean, all of those of us that know, obviously, I know exactly what you're talking about, and being exposed to the world. Obviously, when you're in a certain position in life, you get a position like that, you're going to be exposed to more information, more things are going to be coming at you, and certainly all of those people that you named. Were active behind the scenes, you know. They might have had a certain public image in terms of keeping their career up. But even when music is a powerful thing, right, when you get, I mean, music is one of the things that drives a lot of people. It causes a lot of emotions in people. I mean, you know, if you remember when Mike went on his first tour, his first solo tour, and you see that on MTV and him all over the world, and you see people crying and passing out and all that, this is the effect that his music had on people. And you know, when you touch people like that is when you have a great amount of influence on them. And certainly Mike realized that, and he did, you know, he did want to heal the world. And talking about his artistry, he quoted, he said he wanted his music videos to be like mini movies. That's the way that he saw them. The They Don't Really Care About Us video was produced by my former partner at Drop Squad Pictures, the one they did in Brazil. And Mike went down there. They shot it in the favelas in Brazil, if you watch the original video. Yeah. And he used the drumming corp of the whole black and Hispanic, you know, the Brazilian crew of the drumming corp, drumming with those guys. And he had a traditional shirt on down there. So, yeah, Mike was definitely was active and aware of his place in the world and how he could affect and help his people. And another thing, the bad video, these are my degrees of separation from Mike, on top of when I was a kid, people telling me I looked like him. The bad video, the two other guys beside Wesley Snipes were in a play with me at the time called Jonan at the New York Shakespeare Festival. And the casting director at the Public Theater at the time cast my other two friends in there, and Wesley got in, and I was really kind of upset because I wanted to be in the video with Mike. Two, and so these guys got to be in the video with Mike, you know, and I was a little bit. I was like, well, how come I didn't get an audition, man? You know, so I was a little upset about that. And you know, being in the Michael Jackson video, and that was the first time. And even in that video, it was Mike coming home from prep school, coming back to the hood, hooking up with his boys, and they wanted him. Wes played the character who wanted him to get involved back in the stuff that they used to do, which was kind of illegal And I guess they were supposed to mug somebody or whatever. And when he starts in with I'm bad is when he's rejecting that walk to the dark side or that influence of wanting, you know, of young men. And I took it as a reflection of saying to the brothers out there, you don't have to go that way, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, people didn't really realize, you know, how active he was. And certainly the lineage of the music that he projected, you know, he really respected the history of our music, and and he used it in his music as well. I don't know if you guys wanted to make a couple of points. I just wanted to throw that out there.
You know, I really wanted to, you know, send a message to Cece. I know she's feeling very terrible, absolutely terrible, and we want wish her brother all of, oh, boy, we'll be hearing from her. I can hardly talk. You know, I feel so sorry for her and her brother. But going to this book, you know, your dissertation. How many degrees do you have? Do you want to talk about your degree?
No.
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 But listen, we've been friends for a long period of time, you know. You're like my historian, my good friend, your philosophy. You're brilliant. You know you're brilliant. Nobody I know of has more degrees than you, I'm telling you. But this thing of Michael Jackson as a social activist is absolutely superb. And there's so many other things to be talking about in it. But because you're saying that, talking about when he was aware of the importance of the video, because which became a cultural activity in the 1980s, that you say, and he was releasing short films and his music videos and the art form, and he really made quite an impact on our lives, you know, not only from a social standpoint, but also from a intellectual and thinking deeply about world affairs. He was a social activist.
And also his last video that Tommy. His last album. I was just going to say his last album that Tommy Mottola and those guys tried to tank. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of it, the one with Butterflies and Heaven Can Wait, is the bomb album if you've ever heard it before. But go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, you know, the only thing that I and it just threw me off guard, and maybe this is inappropriate to even bring up, but the one problem that I had with Michael was such an attractive kid, and even as a young adult, you know, I know the public comments about he was suffering from a strange skin disease and all that, but I just felt it was so unnecessary to. I'm saying disfigure, but reconfigure his face and his body in such a way that he was not the person that I used to watch growing up, you know? I wanted to get Glenda's take on why did he go that far, in her opinion.
Well, I choose not to talk about the personal side because, you know, that's what everybody talks about. I always like to focus on his art. But what I will say is, what I will say to that is I did, like, say, my God, you know, why? Because we knew him as, you know, he was beautiful to us. He was always beautiful to us.
Right.
Even when he had his large nose, you know, we saw Michael as adorable. and even when he did the first surgery. But, you know, we don't ever really know how people perceive themselves. And when I read his sister, and I think we all know that she's an adorable little girl and a beautiful woman, Janet did not see herself as attractive. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God. And Janet thought of herself, she had such self-hatred that she used to bang her head into the wall. And
really?
Then her first husband, had to stop her because she did not see herself as attractive. And I said, my God, if Janet could feel that way, I mean, because she was adorable. Then,
right.
You know, that's what about Michael? You know, and
yeah.
LaToya, even though, you know, everybody looks different, LaToya saw her older sister as being the most beautiful. So people kind of, you know, their image of themselves is not really always reality. Mm-hmm. You know,
well,
and
didn't they also have a thing, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, and this is possibly related to rumor. But didn't they also have a thing where he didn't want to perhaps look like Joseph? I mean, there obviously was some tension to
yeah,
to,
I had heard that too, animosity towards his
that,
brother.
Them and the father. I mean,
but you know what? And Joseph Jackson, I have a whole section in my dissertation about Joseph Jackson and his consciousness, but ultimately, Michael, who, you know, was very angry at his father for a very long time, what the speech that nobody talks about is the speech that Michael gave, and it was early in the 2000s at Oxford University. And you could Google it and find it. And Michael gives this very lengthy speech about his father and his relationship with his father, and how but nobody talks about it, and how he forgave his father, and he realized how much his father loved him, and he realized that some ways his father was showing love that he didn't understand at the time. His father was little things. And then what I found about all the Jacksons who have written a book as adults, you know, not the 20, 30-year-old Jacksons, but the Jermaine, LaToya, Janet, all of them said, you know what, I understand now who he was, what he experienced, and why he did what he did. And Jermaine just said he saw his children in a community where there was drugs and gangs and violence, and he was determined that he was going to do whatever he had to do so his kids were going to get out of that and not be a part of it. And that's what Joseph Jackson did, and all of his children. Well, Tito actually said he didn't really care. Whatever happened, because he's happy with his life. But Michael gave a very long speech, which you don't hear too often. And if you listen to it, well, he just said, I forgive him because I can't be complete and whole, and I can't be a good parent if I don't get over how he, you know, treated us and how brutal he was. And he said he understands now that he was dealing in a different period when he wasn't respected, and he was trying to be a man and handle his business as a man with a huge family, and he had a huge responsibility. Yeah. He said that. Mm. You know, he said it. LaToya said it. Jermaine, you know, the ones who wrote the book. And if you listen to them and you're paying attention to them, how they felt when they were 25 or 30 years old, you know, is very different from who they are talking when they were, you know, 45, 50 years old. So.
Yeah. Also, Glenda, you said that in addition, Jackson joined Harry Belafonte, Quincy Jones, and Lionel Richie in their attempt to increase public awareness of global hunger and raise money for starving Ethiopians. We Are the World became an international anthem and includes performances by Harry Belafonte, Ray Charles, Bob Dylan, Jackie Jackson, LaToya Jackson, Marlon, Randy, Tito, Cyndi Lauper, member of the Pointer Sisters, Lionel Richie, Diana Ross, Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, Diane Warwick, Stevie Wonder, and others. And these award-winning stars are cultural icons and therefore social activists. Touch on that a little bit more.
Belafonte said that Michael was very businesslike and serious, very professional, and that whole, you know, when they all got together and did that song, and that was like the beginning of us realizing what he was doing. And, you know, that's who he was, and that's what he tried to do. And you see that same similar theme in his music and the images, you know, and it's just there. It's all over his music. Even the Earth Song, when he starts speaking about what we're doing to the planet, he shows you death, and he shows you resurrection. And
right, the Earth Song,
it's really.
Look at it.
It was amazing for me to kind of like. You know, because I went from, you know, the young, I was a fan of the Jackson 5, and I knew what Michael was doing, but I was so busy being a workaholic that that was like, you know, the background. I wasn't really paying that much attention. Yeah. And it wasn't really, unfortunately, until
you
after
was working,
he died.
You was working back then? You was working when they first came out, when you were 12?
No,
I was a fan back in the day. No, I was a fan. But by the time...
You know you was dancing to I Want You Back. And ABC, you know you're out there dancing to I Want You Back in ABC.
Of course. Everybody had their favorite Jackson. Tito was my favorite Jackson, you know. I like Tito.
Oh.
But
wow. Tito probably would be real happy to hear that because he probably gets the least next. Never mind. Byron, you want to chime in here? Brother Saunders?
Yes, sir. I was just thinking about your response to my question and realizing the many songs that Michael took us to our countries, our mother Africa, Liberian Girl. My God, what a wonderful song that is. And of course, the model played the romantic interest, but he was speaking about Liberia, our first nation of free slaves. I mean, these were so many lines that Michael infused in his lyrics and songs that were, it's incredible. And I really appreciate your effort in your dissertation to share with us, as we are witnessing right now, with the evolution and the presentation of Black Panther, it is engaging our cultural sensibilities in a manner in which it's been, we haven't seen this since the 60s and the 70s during the Afrocentric period. And we have automatically have come back to a moment in time where our cultural sensibilities are being heightened. Michael stands as an icon who opened the door for us to step in to being proud.
Remember what he did with Eddie Murphy? And Aaron Murphy was like, in the Cleopatra?
Remember the time, yes.
Right, exactly. Oh, you know them, right?
Exactly, where they showed Egyptians the true color of Egyptians. And Eddie played the pharaoh, and Iman played his queen.
Uh-huh.
Magic Johnson was in that. You know, I wasn't in that, no. But I mean, all these things that Michael was doing. And Chris Tucker, you know, Chris Tucker is big, was a good friend of Mike. He became tight with Mike. And if you watch Def Jam, one of the first times Chris Tucker is on the Def Comedy Jam, way back in the 90s, right, early 90s, or around the mid-90s, Chris Tucker does a joke about, you know, you guys think Michael's all soft or whatnot. I mean, I'm sure you guys remember when he said, you know, Michael's actually a pimp. You know, he said Michael, and he talked about how Michael would be driving down the boulevard looking for some of his girls, and Tito would be driving, and tell Tito, pull over, Tito, damn. So if you get a chance to watch that clip on Def Jam, it's hilarious. But a lot of people, even my partner said, you know, when Mike would actually talk to you, you know, he would have a different voice. You know, his voice would be a little bit more baritone. So he was a businessman, but my buddy said, you know, once Mike started spinning and locking and popping, boy, you just stand there amazed, you know. And I saw the Victory Tour, and it was an incredible thing. My sister Lisa had seen him a couple of times, and I wonder, since you made that segue, Byron, how Mike would have liked Black Panther, because if we could just talk about that for a few minutes, because it seems like a natural evolution going to that movie and the whole experience, because we saw it on Sunday, and it was excellent. It's everything that you think it is and more, the presentation and just the work. I'm proud to have one of our classmates, Ruth Carter, who graduated with me, actually half a semester behind me because she changed her major to speech and drama from English. This is one of her best pieces of work, the costumes. And if you've seen anything on Ruth Carter, if you've seen anything on on Facebook, they have a little brief video about Ruth talking about the costumes and the influences of African tribes and things like that. So I'm wondering how we all feel, how you guys, how everybody feels about the movie, if you've seen Black Panther, but also just the influence of it. You touched on it a little bit, Byron. Why don't you talk about what your thoughts are? Did you see the movie?
I did indeed. I saw it Monday, and with the anticipation of heightened expectations, and it met every one of my expectations and beyond. And I realized that this movie's given us a rationale for us as the African diaspora to appreciate Africa as a gifted birthplace of humanity and mankind. We don't think about that in the Western world because our philosophy is geared by and generated by a Roman and Greek mythology and Greek the empire. But my God, this movie takes you to Africa and explodes the myth of huts and dirt and reality about the wealth that is in it, it's embedded in its soil, and that there is a in fact, the entire content of this movie challenges us to reconsider the methods that world peace can be achieved, not through confrontation and war, but by another pathway that engages peace, forgiveness. It is almost a spiritual journey that when one witnesses this movie.
Mm.
And also, you know, you really think of a spiritual person when you think in terms of Michael Jackson, and a lot of people think that, you know, he was just a performer. No, no, he wasn't just a performer. And I'm sure, quite sure that, you know, Cece Quarles. Yeah, Cece, you're going to be coming on, and I know that you're going to be listening to this. We hope that your father will be absolutely fine. Your brother, I'm sorry, will be absolutely fine. But, you know, we can't wait to talk to her on the air. So, Glenda, what do you have to say to people like Cece Quarles, this is her calling in or something. Let's get it on. You're on the air. You're on the air.
I'm on the line.
Caller.
It's Cece. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Hello?
I'm in the waiting room.
Is it
Cece? Yes.
Hi,
I'm
Cece.
In the waiting
room. How are you?
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm well. I just wanted to try to make it, and I'm so glad that I did. Hi, Eric.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Cece. What's going on? How's your brother doing?
He's in the emergency room being seen. It was a good time for me to step out. He's going to be okay. He's here where he needs to
be.
So, thank you.
Glad to hear it. Why don't you jump in and tell us, you know, while you're here, why don't you jump in and talk about your thoughts about Michael being a social activist while we have you.
Okay, I don't know, you know, what part of the conversation I jumped in on, but I can just speak from my experience and, you know, in the 60s, the Jackson 5 were everything, and his voice and his music connected with my spirit in a way that I knew I would be connected to him for as long as I could for life, and I am, and I was. I think that Michael Jackson is a prophet. I think that his whole existence was here for a reason that's higher than even we can articulate in our human form.
Yes.
I think that he accomplished his mission, but I think, like most prophets and most people that are anointed, he suffered because of it. And I think he was aware of all of this his entire life. I think he tried to help in the music industry as much as he could, and being honest and being forthright and trying to correct wrongs. I know that when he acquired the Sony publishing rights, that he gave back a lot of royalties to black artists that had been slighted in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. He gave them money back that they were due. I know for sure he gave Little Richard some money back. And there were several others that I can't remember that he did that as well. And I think that was part of the reason that the hunters and the devil started gunning for him, because not only was he this black man that had power, that had, you know, outthought them, but he was giving back money that that was too much. You know, he grew up seeing the music industry, how it worked. He grew up listening to older entertainers tell him how, you know, he had to be careful, how music executives will steal. This was embedded in his DNA from the beginning, and he absorbed everything that he learned, and when he had the opportunity, he knew what to do with it.
Yeah. Now, Cece, I know you're going to be listening to this full show, you know, when you get a chance.
Yes.
And want to say to you that that Dr. Taylor, you know, would probably like to say a few words to you right now. Glenda?
I would love that.
Oh, by the way, everyone, Cece, I keep forgetting your last name.
Quarles.
Wrote a dissertation that I have not finished reading on Michael Jackson. And when I found that out, that's how I found Cece, who is also a friend of Eric's. And we became good friends, so we're looking forward to you coming on. But Glenda, would you like to say a few words to Cece?
Yeah, is your dissertation on ProQuest?
Oh, I think her call was just dropped. I guess the hospital, it might have been the walls in the hospital. I'm seeing she'll probably try to call back, but I see that her call is here. She is. She's back here.
Oh, okay.
Here we
Hello?
Go. Oh, wait, we got you back, Cece.
I'm here. Okay. Thank you.
What I was asking is your dissertation available on ProQuest?
Oh, it's a blog, actually, that I was compelled to write about a month after he died, and it's on Blogspot. It's on Blogspot.
Right, great. Okay, great.
Miss Kay has the link, and I can,
you can send it to me. I'd love to read it.
I would love for you. I'd be honored if you read it. Thank you.
Yeah, I would love to.
And we'll connect.
Yeah, Michael, one thing, I do not know the details. But because I never followed up on it, but you had asked about Michael Jackson, what he would think about Black Panther. I've only heard about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I know Michael would have loved it because Michael wanted to buy Marvel Comics, and I don't know what happened, but the deal fell through. But Michael wanted to own that, and he had an opportunity, but I think some underhanded things happened, and he didn't get it.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not surprised because that was kind of the type of thing that Michael would be into. I just want to talk about briefly. Any of you guys have seen? I'm sure we've all seen the original audition tape of the Jacksons 5 when they went to audition for Motown, where Mike is a little guy. It's a black and white. But in that, you see that this kid is going to be a huge star. You see that he's like an old soul, the way he moves, his showmanship. Obviously, their father was a taskmaster, and he wanted to, being a musician himself and a performer, he made sure that his boys were correct. But and all of them, performed a little bit. But what you see Mike doing throughout his career, but you see it right there, the beginning of it, right in that tape. If you get a chance, check it out.
Yeah.
Because you will see the reason why he became who he was. And you look at it and say, this guy is like a little old man, the way he's performing and his whole swagger and the way he was moving and stuff like that. He was really influenced by the popular musicians of the day, the Jackie Wilsons, the James Browns, and then obviously once getting with Motown, being inspired by Smokey, Stevie, Marvin. I mean, can you imagine being around those individuals? I mean, it must have been, there needs to be, and this is giving me an idea, some sort of miniseries just about the Motown era, other than, we've all seen the Jacksons, American Story, but that Motown era produced, the soundtrack to America for a very long time.
Yeah.
Cece, we're looking forward to having you on. Okay? So we wish you well.
Thank you.
Take care of the family. Take care of your brother.
This is an exciting topic. I could talk about it all day, and I'm glad that I made it for the minutes that I did. And thank you for the opportunity. Yes. Thank you so much.
And listen, we're going to have you on. We're going to make another date with you. I'll be calling you right after the show, and we'll arrange all that. And Glenda Taylor, my good friend, my philosopher, my sister.
And let me just say real quick, I got to give a little Hampton Prize. Cece, say hello to Byron Saunders, our co-host, who is another Hampton graduate.
Right.
We got to represent.
Hello, Cece. All right, we're in the house. Class of 73.
Yeah, and CC Music are coming into their own, especially with Black Panther.
That's right.
It's a great time to be Black. I love it.
And we got your family in prayer, so it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
Thank you,
okay,
guys.
Okay, but don't forget about Wayne Gilman.
Say hello.
Don't forget about Wayne Gilman.
I'm still here.
Wayne.
Hello. Right. I had a pleasure to meet you this way.
I think we spoke before during the riots in Baltimore, I think.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, how are you?
And we talked.
I'm well. I'm holding it together, Wayne. Thank you
right.
so much.
Right, and my regards to your family. Yeah, I hope things work out.
I will. He actually told me to get out and go get on the call. So
well, he's doing good.
So we're gonna let you go.
We're gonna let you go.
All right,
Cece,
guys.
You know.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Take
thank
care.
You. Love you. Let's say, give me Miss Glenda's information so I can send her the blog when you get a chance. Okay.
Sure will. I'll do that right after the show.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Love you too. And we want to say thank you to Dr.
In the process of doing my research, I visited that museum. You all have a great museum at Hampton University.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know how we do.
Yeah, that's really.
Byron built the museum, and I was the curator for a minute.
That's an amazing, I feel so educationally deprived.
Yeah, we were there when it was Hampton Institute. I've seen something that says Hampton Institute University, HIU, but that was it. But we want to say thank you to Dr. Glenda Taylor for sharing this information and educating us a little bit more about Michael, those of us that might not have known quite everything. That Michael Jackson
more.
Did, and there's a lot more. And you said the book is coming out when, Glenda?
What is this? This is we're in April 1st.
April 1st. So
right.
Look for this book
Sunday.
Called What is it called again, Mom?
Wanna be starting something? Michael Jackson, a social activist. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. That's Glenda's book. It's going to be coming out April 1st. And we look forward to it. Dr. Glenda Taylor, once again, as always, it is always enlightening and a pleasure to talk to you, you brilliant lady, you. You are brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Glenda. Thanks, Cece. Thanks, Wayne. Thanks, Byron. Thanks, Eric.
All right. We've got about a few minutes.
Okay.
I want to say thanks. Thank you, Glenda. We'll be talking to you soon. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. So we got a couple of minutes, we didn't get to any Trump news.
Oh, thank goodness.
Real quickly, do you guys want to say anything that's been jumping off a little bit?
I just wanted, for a hot second, I'm just going to say that I'm so proud of our young people, the young activists in Florida who are standing up to this sophomoric. I've run out of descriptions for Donald Trump, other
God
than Donald
him.
Duck. I'm just so proud of that. Finally, somebody's resonating. It seems and
they
penetrating.
Are amazing.
Even though
absolutely amazing.
His suggestions are off the charts, but I'm just hoping that this does not die and stop here.
Mm-hmm.
My 2 cents worth for today is that today is in memory of the loss of our king, Malcolm X. He was killed on this day.
Right.
And to use the, if you do anything, play back Ossie Davis's eulogy with Malcolm X, and then finish it with Spike Lee's Wake Up. That tells the entire story of what we're going through right now. And black power people.
Yeah, you're right about that, my brother. But when you watch the end of Malcolm X, also watch the clip of Malcolm who actually says is saying the speech, and then you have Nelson Mandela, and then Malcolm X finishing it off because Mr. Mandela didn't want to say by any means necessary. But thanks, Byron Saunders. It's time is up, my brother.
Peace and
as usual. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. Peace and love.
All right, there it is. Thank you again, Mr. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman, as always. You're an inspiration, sir.
Thank you. Please tell
thank
my
you.
Family.
I will. Talk to you soon.
I'll write him a note.
All right.
And this has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're here live every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. You can also listen to the show archive. You can listen to it anytime you want. I'm the son of Citizen Payne, or Eric Payne, and you are?
I'm Kay Thompson Payne, every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Join us.
All righty, everybody. Trying to get some music for you as the time goes out. was added to Michael, but I don't want us to get in trouble for playing some music we don't have rights to.
Good night.
Thank you.